Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. This week, it's Geeks On Mailbag episode. For more information and news we talk about in the show, go to our website at www.geekson.com.
Geeks.
Go Team Geeks On. Now you got that in my head. Go Team Geeks On.
Go Team Geeks On. Go.
All your geekly goodness.
By the way, that wasn't me who put that in your head.
No, that was Don this time.
Hello. I'm the one who's never even watched the freaking cartoon.
For those of you who don't know, Aaron's actual superpower. Aaron actually does have a superpower.
Yeah.
He has the ability to put a song in your head.
Yeah, he shoots earworms.
And you can't
right out
get it
eye.
Out ever.
Yeah. All right, so let's see.
Don't do that. Don't do that to our listeners. That's just mean. Maybe
let's send out something into the entire universe.
No. It may have to be physical presence. It may actually have to be eye contact. I don't know.
I want to see. Let's do an experiment and see how vast his superpower is, how far it can reach.
Okay, so at the end of the episode.
Are you the Yuri Geller of earworms?
At the end of the episode, I think you should think of a song.
Okay.
And you should put it in everyone's head.
I will do that.
Okay.
Okay, cool.
Got it. So it is very early here in the Geeks On multi-million dollar recording studio.
Yes.
So I'm actually looking across at a very bleary, hungover looking Peter.
Yes.
And who is Peter?
Hi. I'm Peter. I'm a screenwriter here in Los Angeles, and I am a geek.
My name is Matt. I'm an actor here in Los Angeles, and I'm a geek.
I'd like to stop for a minute there and just say, have Peter say hello again. Hello, Peter.
Hi.
And say Matt say hi again.
Hi.
See, different voices entirely.
Slightly. If I pitched it, maybe I'll just talk down.
We get a lot of emails from people going like,
Who's Peter, who's Matt?
Hosts? What? I don't understand. Right. Hi, my name is Don. I am a video game professional and a writer here in sunny Hollywood, and I too am a geek.
Hi, my name is Aaron Hendricks, and I'm a graphic designer and filmmaker here in Hollywood, and I too am a geek.
Together we form Geeks On.
And I'll form the head.
I wanted to be the head.
I'm the crotch.
All your life.
How was your geek week?
Geek week. Well, I'm going to talk about some of the geek week during our news / reviews /
You're going to save it?
Well, I'll talk about it now, so all right. I just won't have any news. But so I've seen two movies.
Ooh.
That I don't think any of you guys have seen.
Which one?
One was called The Men Who Stare at Goats.
Oh, I really want to see that.
Yeah, me too.
It's a cute movie.
Okay.
I wouldn't say it's spectacular. In fact, I would even say it's a better renter, maybe.
Hmm.
But it's very interesting. It's funny. George Clooney, he saves the movie with his charm. You know, as B.
Well, he's good at that. I mean, he's Cary Grant.
Dreamy.
He's good at that. And so, anyway, it's a great movie for, I think, rental more than anything.
Yeah.
It is interesting, and I will send Peter the link to put it up there. I found some YouTube videos of the real people.
Oh, really?
Talking about the exact staring of at the goats episode. And there's a, in the movie, they have this little like piece tool, which is essentially a weapon. It looks like a bottle opener in a way. You can use it like 100 different ways to take out a foe. And they show a video of this guy really using it.
Okay.
I thought the whole thing was fake in the movie, but they show the real people.
I'm kind of curious about this piece
okay.
tool.
Yeah, so
I'm intrigued. I actually really wanted to see the film originally, but now I want to see it more.
There's all sorts of they call themselves Jedi warriors, and so there's all sorts of Star Wars Jedi references, which is very weird to see Ian McGregor. In fact, I saw a review that said Ian McGregor makes finally a good Jedi movie.
You mean Ewan?
Ewan McGregor. Who did I say?
Ian.
Who's Ian McGregor?
You're getting Ian McKellen and
oh yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Ah, those geek icons.
Same thing.
It's a geek hybrid, you know.
The other movie that I saw was Gentlemen Broncos.
Oh, okay. I'm really chomping at the bit to see that
title ever.
Gentlemen Broncos. It's a really fun movie. Again, very cute. Although I also think it's not great. I also think it could be another renter.
It got not good reviews.
None.
Well,
it got great reviews from the friends of mine who have seen it.
Yeah, so. I'm not sure where the bad reviews went. I mean, it's cute. It's not a great movie, but it's cute. If I had rented it, I think I liked it better instead of paying $15.
Yeah.
But
do you think that's affecting the way people view movies now?
Yeah.
Just, sure. I mean, like, was it a $15 experience?
Yeah. It affects my way when I play video games. That's why Left 4 Dead, to me, is not a great video game. I had fun with it, but I paid $60 for essentially a $40 game for me. Hmm. You guys loved it. I understand.
Yeah. We got our money's worth.
I'm still playing it, so.
But you guys, for some reason, have the ability to play one level over and over again.
That's true. Yeah, you can't.
I do not like that.
I can actually play one level over again with no one else, just looking in corners and breaking boxes.
I hate that shit.
Yeah, but you're the completionist here.
I'm the completionist, most certainly.
The reason we can play levels over and over again is because it changes each time.
It doesn't change enough to me. Mm. Like, that whole director thing is, I think,
well,
bullshit.
You never played Versus, did you?
No, I didn't play Versus.
Versus makes it literally a whole new game every time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's the same map, but a whole new game.
Yeah, sure, sure.
He's not convinced.
But movies, yeah, sure. Sometimes they are better. Actually, sometimes it's even better late night. I'll watch a relatively poor movie late night on HBO and go, okay, I'm glad I watched that.
But I just wonder whether we're going to economically price out our ability to like something.
It's human nature. We judge. If someone said, hey, go see this great movie, it costs $100 to see, and you went back and go, it was not worth $100.
Right.
That's your human nature, judging its cost. We do that with every product.
That's true.
Every product we buy. So,
that's very true.
You know, cars. That's why some people buy
Yugos. I'm just thinking about the bull crap on YouTube, and if they started charging 50 cents for once it got, enough buzz.
Well, maybe.
Well, I had a good geek week. I have discovered the Kindle on iPhone, and I use it way too much now.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's actually, I really thought I was going to be the last person to like this app, and it's great. I really love it.
The irony being about this, that we talked about this on an episode about 2 months ago.
And I said I would never use it.
Yes.
The standard response from you that you bring this app up to anybody is like, I don't like reading on small screens. That's what everybody says. Mm-hmm. They just will not even try it. And I'm like, really? I mean, I just download like the $5 book or whatever.
I will be honest that I do prefer reading out of a book.
Sure.
By a long shot.
Right,
but
of course.
That said, it's nice to be able to haul around whatever book you're reading in your iPhone and just be able to pull it out and read a couple pages anywhere, anytime.
I just love
without
the heft.
Having to carry it around all the time.
Yeah, to me, like, I've been throwing books on there that, not the book I'm reading, but a book that, if I happen to be somewhere and I need something to do, I can open. It's like I've been just putting small books on there.
I've read Anansi Boys on there, Neil Gaiman, and Paul Rudnick's I Shudder.
Right.
And
I think it totally works.
Yeah, it's you don't put your main book on there.
Yeah.
I agree. Like, I would never put like Game of Thrones on there because why does my iPhone
weigh more?
It's like 4 ounces more. Yeah.
So I have to admit I am eating my words on that one. I mispredicted. It is a useful app. And also my newest video game released this week.
Awesome.
Murder, She Wrote, the casual game based on the 80s and 90s TV show. And I got fantastic reviews. And
Angela Lansbury liked it?
Angela Lansbury liked it.
That's awesome. Angela Lansbury liked your game.
Yay. And the sales in the first 2 hours, because it's a downloadable game, right? Mm-hmm. So you can actually measure how many people are playing it and how many people are buying it, like, right there. The information's right in front of you. And our sales in the first 2 hours were staggering.
Great.
Staggering. They were so much more than I expected them to be.
Fan-frickin-tastic.
To give you an idea, like, the conversion rate for a downloadable game, you're doing well if you hit 5%. That means like 100 people download your game, 5 people buy it. Right?
Wow.
That's good.
For people who don't know, a lot of these games have the download, the trial, or the demo, which gives you either just a level or a portion or a timed version of the game. And
usually
then says,
an hour
buy now.
Free. Yeah. Right. So our game gives you 1 hour free. And going by the comments and the reviews, user reviews right now, and going by some of the numbers, our conversion rate is well above double digits, which is a very happy thing.
Badass.
So, yay.
Nice.
All right. So I've been playing Batman Arkham Asylum.
Matt finally got it.
Oh my god. Yeah, I've been playing Space Invaders.
Another thing that happened about 2 months ago. You know. Longer, actually.
But I'm not.
Hey, Matt,
Batman.
Have you tried that Asteroids game?
I was busy. Awesome. I was on 24 in numbers.
Is awesome. Ribbit, 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 ribbit.
Yeah.
Y'all suck.
No, but I've been. I was on 24, so now I was shooting 24. Now. So, but now I'm Batman.
I'm glad that I could pass the reins to you.
Yes. I'm Batman.
Well, maybe since you're a completionist.
Yes.
I understand that if you get every one of the riddles done, you get to fight the Riddler.
Yeah, I'm going to try.
Which I never. Ugh. I got very close, but I.
I didn't even. I went to try.
I just looked at the number that were left and I'm like, nope, done. Here.
Yeah, me too.
I'm going to try.
I was getting pretty close, actually, but then I just ran out of time. So.
Excellent. No, I'll.
Yeah, it's a damn good game. Huh?
It's a damn good game. It's just fun as hell.
What I want. That was the superhero game I wanted.
Yeah.
Well, isn't it great? By the way, speaking of old games, we had a friend who we saw last night who I gave him Knights of the Old Republic.
Yes.
And I was like excited for him to play it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that game was what, 6 years old?
At least.
Whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, And it's amazing he can still play it because, you know, he still has his Xbox that's that old.
Well, you can play that on the 360.
You can play that on the 360.
That one, I think, is backwards compatible.
Yeah.
I want to text him to make sure that he saves the game. It's hard to remember going back how bad the saving system used to be in video games because now everything auto saves and stuff and you just turn things off. That doesn't do that.
No.
You have to save.
Although
the damn
that game also made sure that everybody saved right before they made a decision.
Well,
they'd
make
a decision, see what the reaction was, see what the benefits and flaws were, and then go back to the save and decide.
Well, you know, I heard a developer's diary for the Knights of the Old Republic massively multiplayer game,
right?
And they said one of the things we love about this version is you cannot do that.
Yeah, you got to stick with it.
In an MMO, you make a decision and you can't go back.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're excited about those.
I am.
That type of
choice. That game might eat my life.
Oh, I can't wait.
It might eat my life.
All right.
Oh, by the way, a couple of comic books. I'm sorry, Pete. Go. I've been talking. Go ahead.
I just wanted to throw. Am I actually interrupting you?
Yeah, no, go.
Everybody,
my God, I've never done this.
Everybody take two drinks.
This is a moment in geek history.
Is this the sixth sign or just the fifth?
Fifth, I think.
Okay. Water turns to blood.
We are getting close to the apocalypse, apparently.
It's 2012.
So I downloaded the Left 4 Dead 2 demo and played it.
Oh, me too.
I like how you did the little zombie hand when you said that.
Zombie gang signs. And it's interesting. It's a very different type of gameplay already.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot. The first thing I noticed was there's a lot more zombies. I mean, like, when you step out, and there's a lot more open space, too. So the way you play is very different. And then we've already talked about there's two new zombies, the Spitter and the Charger. But there's a third zombie that we didn't know about who I love.
The Jockey.
The Jockey.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little jockey guy who jumps on people's heads and just starts tearing up their faces and starts leading them away from the group. He controls where they go.
Oh, okay.
So you've got to chase after this guy and knock him off or shoot him off, or else your person's going to be run off into, like, who knows where, or, you know, and get slaughtered.
Well, I hear they tried to create a couple of characters that essentially would split up groups.
Yeah.
And I think the Charger blasts people or something.
Yeah, the Charger runs.
The Charger scatters. It's like a
he scatters him, grabs the last person he hits, and then starts just pounding him on the ground.
Yeah, so they try to figure out ways to get groups apart.
And the Spitter spits out this big, giant blob of acid that's an area effect thing. So if you're all in the same place, you all get acided at the same time.
Oh, so that's a decision.
And then there's the Jockey, and then there's one that I didn't see in the demo. That's the Flamer.
Oh, I haven't heard of that.
You see him in the opening movie. He's this
brains,
guy.
What are you doing?
I'm going to totally eat your brains. I apologize to our gay listeners. That was uncalled for. In the opening intro, he has the best, like, you know, sizzle shot, where apparently...
What are you doing?
That's what it's called. It's a sizzle shot.
Wow.
It's what it's called.
Wow.
It's the industry term.
Fried brains.
He's in an environmental suit.
Yeah, I saw him.
Yeah, so it's just this great shot of this guy in an environmental suit turning towards the camera and it's inner lit. So
that's cool.
Looks so
nasty. He's burning on the inside.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
cool design.
Yeah. I was wondering who he was. I didn't know why. I didn't know who he was.
It wasn't in the demo. At least when I played through,
it wasn't
there.
No, we didn't fight him yet. You know.
By the way, this does remind me of something we should talk about. Did you guys hear about the controversy of
is this going to go somewhere eventually? Or?
Yeah. The wow.
The Peter. I'm being asked you. Wow. Normally
wow. Peter's on his game today.
The controversy of the new Call of Duty
the fag
marketing
trailer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
So a trailer that was created by apparently another company, not by the group. A company was hired to do some viral marketing, some like internet videos.
Okay.
And so they did like a
they're doing an ARG or no, viral marketing.
Yeah,
whatever
it was like
it
a
viral video,
like a in-game graphic.
It's a machinima thing.
Movie where they're trying to talk to people who do like grenade spamming. So they get on multiplayer. You know, that's saying don't be a jerk online, essentially.
Right.
But what they did was they said we're part of a group called the Founders Against Grenade Spamming, mm-hmm. or something like that.
With right. the first letter of each word,
saying
fags. Right.
And, you know, of course, beginning on the internet, people figured that out like instantly.
Yeah.
And so all hell broke loose, and then the company got called, and the company's like, yeah, we didn't realize that they claim they didn't realize that was in there.
I'm pretty sure that they did not realize that was
no,
in there. That's
I
the type
disagree.
Of thing.
I totally
were?
Disagree. Because what do you call someone? What is the common lingo you call someone when they're doing gameplay you don't like?
Yep.
Yeah. Fags. But yes, obviously.
Did the developers know that this is what their viral video was doing?
I'm not encouraging that sort of language. I'm just saying that's the common vernacular that people know as
in that game.
Dicks on Xbox.
No,
tend
no
to use that sort
I
of
get
language.
That. But the thing is I have to believe that the actual.
Developers are
smart enough to recognize that that's really something they shouldn't
be doing.
Well,
it wasn't developers. It was marketing people.
No, but the developers...
And marketing people are never that bright.
Oh.
Well. They're really not. Well, yeah. Most of the marketing people I've met have been like former frat boys.
It just
boys.
Seems to me like since they're doing a viral campaign, when you're doing a viral campaign like that, you're not spending a lot of money. You know, it's
by the way, I just managed to alienate a professional segment of our listening audience.
Yes, exactly. And
that's
a professional
a
segment that you're within.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to say, I'm kind of a marketer, too.
Fag.
Well, with this type of online, people were saying this is the type of stuff that would get them not to buy a game.
Yeah.
Would this affect your...
I was actually going to buy this one, but I was on the fence with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when that came out, I'm like, all right, I know it just pushed me off the fence onto one side.
You got Humpty Dumptied?
Yeah, pretty much. So, like, yeah. I mean, if you really want the game, it's not going to stop you. But if you're sort of debating whether you want to put out the money for it, it may stop you.
I'll decide in 3 months.
Right. When everyone else is done playing.
Right.
So, so Left 4 Dead 2 was the first thing. And already, even without the extra zombies, without the extra special zombies, mm-hmm. it feels very different. Also... all the special zombies got kind of a redesign.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like the female versions of them now.
So you felt like it's a better game.
Actually, I don't know that it's a better game.
Hmm. I agree.
You know, it's a different game.
Oh, okay.
And it's actually, in a weird way, it's a harder game. Because playing on the extreme level was actually very difficult. It was very difficult to get through even the beginning.
Well, that's just because there's many zombies now.
Well, it's extreme.
Yeah, there's like probably twice as many zombies coming at you.
Wow.
So you've got to be on your game with this. And you have to play
And with the melee weapons, it's not always easier to hold them off. Because I'm sitting there with a frying pan just swinging for dear life, and they're coming around that frying pan left and right.
Yeah. Well, and you can't block. You can't just sit there and go block, because you get tired. So basically, the melee weapons are the new version of the block. You know, you've got to be working together to do it. But yeah, it's very interesting. So then the other thing is, I've been listening to the Mistborn Chronicles, mm-hmm. By Brandon Sanderson, who is the person that took over for the Wheel of Time
for series. Robert Jordan, and actually
it is just published.
You just pushed it out of the book. Yeah.
So this
is a continuation of the Wheel of Time.
Yes. And I'm very excited to read this. Because actually what he did was kind of something that I wanted as a fan. Was Robert Jordan, towards the later stage of the books, was all over the world. I mean, he was just trying to tie up things left and right and was just piecemealing chapters all over the world. And supposedly these books center, they just stay focused on the main character and one other storyline, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really interested to see how this flows.
Now, did you finish the Wheel of Time series?
It's going to be done in four books. So this will be the first of the four that will take for him to go through all of Robert Jordan's notes.
But basically, I can see why they picked him, actually. Having listened to, on the second book from the Wheel of Time series, and he does a lot of the inner monologues and the thoughts that people have naturally in his own stuff. And so, and the irony is that the person that they have to do the audiobook for the Wheel of Time series is the same person they have doing his audiobook. And there's a lot, you can hear.
That's smart, because there's some consistency. It's not like they...
Yeah. So anyway, I actually think that they chose very well in the person that they picked.
Okay.
We'll have to see. I'm sure that, it's going to be different.
His wife made the indecision, I think. So.
Yeah, she did. I stopped reading those books quite a while ago.
Yeah.
They got too weird. And
Through 10.
And they emasculated some of my favorite characters.
Yes.
They just became wussy and I didn't care anymore.
My general feeling when I was going through them was he had a series of really good books. Then there were a couple that were not so good, but then it got good again.
Yeah, supposedly the last two have been really good, and I was like, but I was also...
It's been so long now, though, I have to reread.
Yeah.
And I started the first book again using Peter's audiobook.
Yeah.
And the audio narrator was fantastic.
And that's the narrator
very
doing
impressed.
The Wheel of Time series. I mean, doing the Mistborn series.
Right.
Same narrator. I mean,
I was very
really
impressed,
good.
Very talented. What was funny, though, is they did, because the Wheel of Time series, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, it's a fantasy series where basically the world has been split, because at one point there were two halves of magic, male and female. The male half went insane, and so now there's only the female part left that's trying to keep the male half in check.
Yeah,
because...
males have also been culled out of society. They've been killed off.
So it leads to sort of the entire series is very sort of polarized in male and female perspective, right? So what they did with the audiobook was, it's one of the few audiobooks I've heard where they had a male and female narrator.
Yeah.
And what I thought was so interesting, though, is that in the book I heard, at least, the male narrator was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And the female narrator was just kind of there.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when the male narrator is doing the female characters, they were much more alive and believable than when the female narrator was doing them.
Huh.
It was sort of interesting.
By the way, the way I get audiobooks, I use audible.com.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get a subscription where you basically spend $15 a month, and every month you can download a book for free.
Right.
Which is kind of cool, because some of these books are $40 books.
Sure.
So anyone out there who has never kind of experimented with audiobooks, that's the way I would go. Obviously.
And you get different kinds. You can get like a two book per month, or three book per month.
Great. So are we in news?
Wait, let me just do one more since I don't have news. We talked about this like a year ago, geocaching.
Oh,
so
fun.
So I downloaded a geocaching app on my iPhone because somebody at work had done it. And I was surprised, at least in Los Angeles, that there are these geocaches hidden
everywhere.
I mean, thousands of them all over the city. Geocaching, if you don't know, is it's kind of like a treasure hunt that people hide little boxes or small little, they call them micro caches. Sometimes they're like little pill size things all over. And then they tag them with a GPS number, and then they submit them to websites, or some people just have their own.
And they'll occasionally have some hints or stuff to help you find it.
Cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Your dad's big into this, right, Pete?
Yeah, my dad, when he was down here, that was one of the things we did. We'd run around the city looking for geocaches. And the thing that's kind of cool about it is that a lot of times there will be things in your neighborhood where you'll go, you'll be driving over the Shakespeare Bridge, for example.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you'll go, I know it's called the Shakespeare Bridge. I know it's really pretty, but I don't know anything about it. And so the geocaching websites often, what they'll do is they'll give you the coordinates for what it is, but they'll also give you histories.
Oh, that's fun.
Of the buildings
that's
that
nice.
You go to.
So, I love that. It's a great idea.
Yeah, so you get like a sort of a historical, you know.
Be like a treasure hunt / walking tour of the city.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. So we had a blast doing it.
Geocache.com is a huge one where they keep track of hundreds of thousands of these things all over the world, and they have their own app. Now, that one is, I think there's a free version, but there's also a $10 version. There's all sorts of free iPhone apps for it, but this one connects directly to their site. And so you can get, you can just say, find all the caches around me, hit a button, it puts up a map and tags all the ones around you. Then you can click on them, it gives you all the hints.
Wow.
Direct. You can leave a comment right there. You can read other people's comments in case, you know, you can't find it.
That's fun.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. But it's given me an idea. So I'm doing a project that here in Los Angeles, and when I'm done, I will
A Geekson geocache.
I'm going to play with my friends first, and then if it works, I might put it out for the public.
Oh wow! Okay,
so yeah.
Aaron's got a secret. It's
amazing how close you can use the iPhone to do this stuff, and it's amazing. Which of course you just said, it's amazing how well it works.
Yeah,
I mean,
actually, I thought it was going to be less accurate. I went and looked at my first, tried to find my first one. I couldn't find it, and I said it's somewhere within this block, you know, this big radius. And I was looking all over the place. And finally, I just couldn't find the damn thing. And I just zoomed in on the map and just started walking to exactly where. And it was so accurate. It was down to the feet that I just looked down and it was exactly right where.
Wow. Like,
my GPS, my iPhone was very accurate.
Yeah. Wow.
So, yeah. Oftentimes, it'll get you within 5, 6, 10, 20. It'll tell you how far away you could be.
It is weird to me, though. Like, it can be so accurate. And then there are times where it's just like, no, I don't know where you are.
I have no clue. You're in Santa Monica somewhere.
Yeah. I believe you're in San Francisco. Is that correct?
The iPhone does it by a whole bunch of different ways. It's got GPS using satellite. It's using triangulation through your cell phone towers. And it's also using any type of Wi-Fi that's around you. So it's trying to use all that stuff to get as close to the mark as possible. So it's
interesting. But when you're driving on the 101, it can't find you. So just saying.
Right.
I've never had problems with that.
Yeah, me neither.
I always do. Whenever I'm downtown, there's a black zone or something.
That's because you're in the buildings and the satellites.
No, I'm in my car.
Yeah, between buildings.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, between buildings and the satellites have a hard time hitting you.
That's how you run from them. That's how you run.
That's another spot that you have trouble.
By the way, big ups to my friend Josh, who just booked Thor. He is going to be an ice giant in Thor. So,
is this Josh from Babylon 5?
Yes, Josh Cox. So he's given me some inside skinny right now. I will not release any of it because I'm not allowed and I don't want to get him in trouble. But he will be eventually on the show talking about Thor and all of the fun stuff that's coming up. So it's really cool. Shall we do some news?
Let's.
Okay. All right. So speaking of video game companies that have dropped their sponsors and marketing programs, I have a news story that's sort of hand in hand. Okay. Microsoft is going to drop the Windows 7 Family Guy episode. How surprising.
Oh, I heard that they were doing this. What?
Yeah. Well, okay. In a hilarious turn of events, Microsoft execs have pulled the plug on an episode of Family Guy they sponsored as part of their publicity campaign for the launch of Windows 7. The collaboration with the foul-mouthed Family Guy was part of the company's attempt to be down with the kids.
Oh, God.
I'm surprised that they agreed to this.
Yeah. Have you not watched an episode of Family Guy?
No, I'm surprised.
It's
that
sort of like Seth MacFarlane
agreed to do an entire episode as an ad.
Oh, are you kidding?
Yeah, come on.
Oh, my
on.
God.
Come
on. I would jump on that.
Yeah.
Especially if they gave me any kind of creative license.
Well, they wouldn't.
Yeah, they...
Microsoft is going to give Seth MacFarlane license to do anything they want with their product.
Listen to the end. Exactly. We initially chose to participate in the Seth and Alex variety show based on the audience composition and creative humor of Family Guy. But after reviewing an early version of the variety show, it became clear that the content was not a fit with the Windows brand.
Ha!
We continue to have a good partnership with Fox, Seth MacFarlane, and Alex Borstein, and we are working with them in other areas. We continue to believe in the value of brand integrations and partnerships between brands, media companies, and talent. Okay. Wait. It seems to have been the jokes about deaf people, the Holocaust, feminine hygiene, and incest that they felt did not fully embody the values of Windows 7.
All right. Now that I hear that, let me explain to you my version of what happened. Microsoft calls up Fox and says, "We want to pay you a lot of money to do an episode that is essentially an ad for us." Fox goes, "You betcha. I'll call Seth MacFarlane right now and tell him he has to do it." Seth MacFarlane gets on the phone and goes, "You want me to do what? You want me to sell what? All right, I'll write you an episode of that will sell Microsoft Windows." He writes a script. It gets him out of that hole.
That's what happened.
All right.
This reminds me of a story about Ron Moore with Battlestar, where the Battlestar execs said basically, everything's so down and so depressing. Can we just have some lightness in the show? Can we have like a birthday party or something?" So they have this birthday party where they're on the deck with all the ships and stuff. And in the middle of the birthday party, something breaks and these raptors fall out of their containments up there and smoosh 12 people. At which point, the execs got on the phone and they called Ron where they go, "Okay, we get the message. We're not going to tell you that. You know, lighten it up anymore."
It's too bad the people from what was the show Eureka that had to use Ban Roll-On to solve one
really?
We talked about in the show.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
I don't remember this at all.
I believe it though.
They had to use the product to solve the episode.
Or and how
the
about
writers were like,
Smallville is the worst about this.
No, Smallville.
Smallville has so jumped the shark on product placement. My favorite line now is when Clark got his powers removed for whatever fucking reason, and Chloe goes, "No, Clark, use my Yaris." He runs over to her.
Oh,
like, no, the worst one I saw was like somebody forgot their. Somebody was usually wearing glasses, but then they like had someone says something's different about you. It's like, "Yeah, I'm not wearing my glasses," and they put and she said something like, "Thank God for
Bausch and Lomb.
Thank God for or AccuView to the rescue," is what she said.
Oh God! Yeah. Oh God!
I was like, "Oh Chloe,
that's a drinking game."
Yeah.
Do any of you remember? I can't remember the name of the movie. It starred David Duchovny and Orlando Jones. It was like Evolution,
right.
Where at the end of the movie, the big finale of the movie is they have to use Head and Shoulders shampoo.
Oh God!
Truckloads of it as an enema on the attacking alien, giant alien, to kill it.
Wow. 30 Rock does it well because they just flat out tell you that they're marketing.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I am so on board with their stuff. Yeah. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, they'll just turn to the camera and say something like "Bye, GE,"
and usually ended with a ding, you know.
And I got an article for you guys.
Right.
So this is a quote from Gizmodo. "I'm touching a wet slab of protein, what feels like a paper thin slice of bologna. It's supple, slimy, but unlike meat, if you were to slice it down the center today, tomorrow the wound would heal. It's factory-grown living tissue." The company behind the living Petri dish-grown substance known as Apligraf hates my new name for it, the meat Band-Aid. It's living, Dr. Damian Bates, chief medical officer at Organogenesis, corrects me. "Meat isn't living. But no one argues with me that the substance is really just a Band-Aid. A living $1,500 Band-Aid, I should say. Apligraf is a matrix of cow collagen, human fibroblasts, and keratinocyte stem cells from discarded circumcisions that when applied to chronic wounds, particularly nasty problems like diabetic sores, can seed healing and regeneration. But Organogenesis is not interested in creating... Let me do this again. But Organogenesis is not interested in creating boutique organs for proof of concept scientific advancement. They're a business in the business of mass tissue manufacturing and the very first of its kind."
Whoa. Okay.
So that's pretty cool.
Big, hold on. So when you're putting this on you, you're actually you're slapping bits of schlong onto you.
Yep. It's the schlong Band-Aid.
Well, first of all, they're taking...
I think that's better than the meat
Band-Aid. It's schlong aid.
They're taking stem cells from there.
From schlong.
It's stem schlong aid.
The funny thing is, I'm thinking of somebody using this, I'm thinking those, you know, like when you buy like meat patties and stuff, they come like sandwiched in that like there's a paper.
There's the paper.
Yeah, I'm thinking like them peeling off that paper and then slapping on your arm and like peeling it off.
Wow.
Okay, well, this is a potentially life saving thing. It sounds fantastic.
Burn
it sounds
victims.
Amazing, and yeah. All I can think is like you're not slapping schlong bits on my face.
Well, let me just reread the first sentence. Okay.
There goes your sex life.
Okay. I'm touching a wet slab of protein.
No, you guys.
But it feels like paper.
Moving on. There's half of our audience is horribly turned off. The other half is horrifically aroused.
I don't know. I think it's pretty awesome that they're, you know.
Well, good.
Yeah.
And but now we know what the skin on the Terminator is made out of.
Yeah. Kind of disturbing at the same time. You're like, whoa.
I do think it's genius. I mean, that is amazing. But
yeah, we're using living products, you know. It's like suddenly I'm
how much is it? It's $1,400 now?
$1,500.
That's not that.
But I'm wondering how
high
it like,
for a beginning
you,
product.
Like, does it fuse onto you and then like integrates into your system? Like,
I think it, yeah, it fuses on and it grows. It literally grows. It will regrow if you cut it.
It probably is like a
the
neutral.
Band-aid will heal itself.
Well, it's kind of there's got to be a way for it to hook into your blood supply. I mean, there has to be.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
Bizarro.
So we don't know how it's applied.
I think if you put it over a bloody wound, it's hooked into your blood supply. It's just taking the blood coming from that.
Then is there an anticoagulant stopping you from clotting? You know, there has to be something there.
Don wants
specific. Don wants some specs. Well, I think you should go look up some specs, Don.
Very interesting. I'm sure they've worked some of that stuff.
Don, everything with you is always about specs.
What else you got, Don?
I have two quick things. One, Jolt Cola is now deceased.
Oh. Yes.
Too many energy drinks out there for it.
Yeah,
to...
pretty much. It was killed by Red Bull. But more importantly, some really bad business decisions by the company. It sounds like they're being sued by half of Chicago for a breach of contract and all sorts of stuff.
There you go.
So it's funny because, for our younger listeners who always grew up in the age of the energy drink, Jolt was sort of the first. You know, that was our first mass consumption energy drink.
Yeah, it was pretty double the sugar, double the caffeine.
Yep. And that got some of us through college.
Double the heart attacks.
Yeah.
So the hackers just essentially
the hackers
to...
abandoned and went over to Mountain Dew.
Right.
You know, so it's like some scary stuff. But I also have it's actually more of a link than a news story. But I just thought this thing was cool. There is a kitchen biosphere that's out there right now.
Really?
Basically, it's a self-contained biosphere farm. That provides fresh fish and produce 52 weeks a year. It's got these...
How big is it?
It's about the size of a wall. It'd be the size of like you know your oven, your stove, your refrigerator.
Oh, so it's a stand-up.
It's a big stand-up thing. Mm-hmm. It's got... it produces algae. It produces grasses and herbs.
Well, I thought it was the entire kitchen,
and
so it's just a unit.
It's a unit, but I don't think... The one unit that there is pictured in this, mm-hmm. I don't think it's sufficient to actually support like a family or anything.
Right,
it's going to be a little supplemental thing, like an herb garden or a... mm-hmm. It's sort of like a really large window box that produces fish, you know?
Right.
But it's... the concept of it is very interesting.
Yeah.
It's sort of like the ultimate in hydroponics that you could conceivably, if you had a room dedicated to it, you could probably significantly supplement your family's food every year.
Right. Ah, fish again.
Just eat your algae.
Yeah.
You know? But it actually looked really beautiful.
You are not leaving the table till you finish your algae.
Here's the thing that I thought was very interesting. It also will deliver fresh hydrogen, which can be used to power a car and run on food waste from the kitchen. The plants produce oxygen, which is then fed into the fish tank to keep the occupants happy. And the tank is kept clean by shrimp, which can also be eaten.
Huh.
So it's this entirely self-contained thing. It's actually sort of a beautiful design. Hmm. I just thought it was neat.
The kids have named all the shrimp.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Yeah.
Look at Chloe.
The last thing I just wanted to throw out there real quick is it's more of a link. Basically, this man has created his life's dream of building a Pan Am first-class section in his garage.
So he just built the interior of a plane in his garage.
Not the entire plane, just the first class section.
We should go film there.
And so basically, this guy apparently went on a Pan Am first class flight when he was a little kid. And in this time period, he's saying this was when Pan Am was known as luxury. And flying was a high class thing, an experience to be savored as much as your vacation.
2001.
Yeah. So, so basically, he wanted to reproduce that experience for himself. And he spent something like $15,000 doing it over the past couple years. But the pictures in there are stunning. It's beautiful.
It's a perfect.
So you would nothing. It's actually completely contained, so it feels like you are in a plane.
Yes, it looks like it, and it even has.
I wonder if his wife comes down in the stewardess outfit and like asks him if he wants
it. Such a kinky Mile High thing.
There is, in fact, a snack cart that he has that that someone could wear a uniform and push around.
That's just like it's got hire a stripper for like 3 hours to like push it around. Hot stripper. Get a big screen television in there and just hang out.
But it did make me realize a couple things. Like I did some research on the history of like service on airplanes, and I didn't realize like when airplanes first started going up, the stewardesses had to be trained nurses. Mm. They actually had to have significant medical training, and they were fairly educated people. So it was very interesting the differences. Now I'm not saying stewards or stewardesses are dumb. I'm not implying that. It's just a different type of training.
They were all right, too back then.
Bad language could be good for you. New study shows.
Oh, and staring at boobs. Did you hear
that? I didn't hear that one. No.
That was last week, too.
All right, well, for the first time, psychologists have found that swearing may serve an important function in relieving pain. The study, which was published in Neuro Report, measured how long college students could keep their hands immersed in cold water.
Did they do this story a couple weeks ago?
No.
I don't know.
During the chili exercise, they could repeat an expletive of their choice or chant a neutral word. When swearing, the 67 students volunteers reported less pain on average and endured about 40 seconds longer.
It's probably because it's an endorphin release when you kind of have an outburst, you know?
But their assumptions is, I would say when you hurt yourself, swear. That's their solution.
I understand that.
I never understood why swearing is bad. In that context, like if you're in pain or you're surprised, I don't like, and a kid swears, I don't know why you would punish that kid.
Swearing at all bad?
Yeah, I mean, I don't
think
fully
about
get it.
It. The only thing that is wrong about a swear word is that we have all decided that it's wrong.
Yeah, I never got that. I can understand why, like, because it can be considered to be intimidating or insulting to direct it at somebody else.
But the fact is that we use language, we connect language to emotions, and we words do mean things to us, and we are trained that certain words come up with, make us feel happy, make us feel sad, make us uncomfortable. I mean, that's why we use language. That's what it is for. And so we have said these words are meant to make everybody uncomfortable. Otherwise, we wouldn't have swear. I mean, it would be useless.
Well, but also look at what those words are. They all typically have to do with
sexual orientation.
Things that make you uncomfortable. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, why don't you scream out like,
or excreting.
You know, oh, rabbits, when you get hurt.
I know some people
who do
sugar.
Yeah.
I guarantee use sugar like it's a swear word.
They're not getting the
they're relief. Not getting the 40 second break.
They're not getting the relief of pain that
I would actually.
I'm just sort of. I mean, because I understand the difference between a victimless swear word and a swear word with a victim. You know, the N word. You know. Mm-hmm.
Well, I would. I would also say that from a new dad's perspective, and I don't know what the real reasoning is, but from a new dad's perspective. Swear words and language are the first way that you're teaching your kid, okay, these are the societal norms. You have to learn how to behave so that everybody operates in the same form. And that's one of the first ways to teach your kid, you know, okay, no. There are certain things that we do, and there are certain things that we don't do.
You said do-do.
Yeah. Well, you there swore. We go. I broke it.
I mean, you've had, you know, you've told me that you will listen to a song with swear words and it makes you feel differently than if someone just swears.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely true.
It doesn't make any sense either. So it's just tapping into, you know.
I remember we did an acting class where one of the things we had to do was go through and we had to pick a swear word that made us terribly uncomfortable. And we just had to say it over and over and over and over and over again in the class, you know, just
so to see you next to, Tuesday.
Yeah, a lot of people see you next Tuesday walking around, just saying it over and over and over again, just experiencing the word. And it's funny because I was in a class of 30 and everybody's just with the most filthy things coming out of people's mouths. And just walking around the room.
Theater school.
You get paid. But again, the difference 30, between 000. An exclamation, you know, like stubbing your toe and swearing is very different from song lyrics, where you're intentionally conveying a series of imagery.
You don't think that when
which
I
is also
swear,
very different from calling someone something in a way meant to offend them, or you know,
exactly. But so as far as just like an exclamation,
there is a reason why when you do that, you pick a swear word.
All right, Don,
it's because you are trying to convey something.
I'm not really understanding this. Would you sing something for me with some swear words in it so I could get it?
No.
Come on, no,
Peaches. Family Show Peaches and Flash is Gordon good. Will track me down and beat me into a bloody pulp.
Oh, come on. Fuck that.
Peter!
How dare you?
I'm
now we have to
shocked.
Tag this with explicit. All right, let's move on.
All right. Shall we hit our topic then? Or you got
more.
Anything else?
I got one more. All right. So
we're only 45 minutes into.
Yeah. Yeah.
So last week, or maybe it wasn't last week, but recently we did a news article where we started a new column called
Adventures in Technological Stupidity.
Yes.
But this is sort of the opposite. Last time the article was about someone who was robbing someone and they checked their Facebook account.
Yes.
Yeah.
And because of that, they got arrested.
Right.
Because they left themselves
logged in. So this is the opposite thing? So what would you like to call this one?
Adventures in Technological Luckiness? I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, basically,
so your new segment, which by the way only lasted one time, is now another segment.
Well, no, this is the opposite. It just plays into that. But I do want to continue to do that column.
Okay,
I think it's fun.
Okay.
But basically, a 19-year-old New York City man was arrested on robbery charges, has been exonerated thanks to his Facebook page and a request for pancakes. Basically, he was arrested and held for 12 days on suspicion of robbing two people, and they found out that he updated his Facebook page from his father's house at the exact time that this place was being robbed.
Mm.
So he basically said he was teasing his girlfriend, asking her when she was going to bring him some IHOP, and because of that, he is not going to jail.
Facebook as what?
So Facebook has put people in jail and
taking them out of jail.
You know,
interesting.
It is a new society.
We do not know the ramifications of our actions when we start them.
Yeah.
Also, they found big time water on the moon. I know this is a huge story and everything like that.
I don't really know gallons
of it.
Wow.
Yeah, and basically, it's in ice. It's in a crater. Let me pull it up.
They dug a hole.
Yeah.
And essentially found, like...
Well, they didn't dig a hole. They shot a missile effectively off of a satellite.
The missile thing did pay off.
And it hit a crater in the moon, and they had enough of a splash, pardon, that they found about 2 gallons on the moon when they did it. It's a very complex article, so I would say go and read it. But the long and the short of it is they found water on the moon. We can use that to make hydrogen fuel. It is potable, so it could be drinkable by our astronauts. And there's a lot of
I
hope
said call there. Me when you find 2 gallons of vodka on the moon.
Yeah, and then I'll show up.
Moon vodka.
All right, so let's do a little mailbag.
Mail's in.
I sensed there was mail.
What's this? A letter for me.
DeMail! DeMail is here!
Woo! All right, so this is mailbag.
Yep.
We're cleaning out a rather large
lots
mail.
And lots of mail from going pretty far back.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sorry to all of you who we're not reading your mail on the air, but some of you asked 19-20 questions and we can only answer one.
We prefer the corrections, clarifications, and questions to be read. We do get a lot of fan mail that people just compliment us or
and we do appreciate those. So please keep them coming.
Yeah, those are
those are amazing.
Those are that's the fuel that keeps all these emails are the fuel that keeps us going. We don't get paid for this. This is just an ego
stroking device.
Yeah, so the more, So, you know, well, I'm
fleshy. You can slap it on.
I'll be completely honest. It's an ego project that we do, and we love
doing
feedback.
It.
And we actually like feedback about, you know, hey, you know, this is the problem we have with.
So if you did not hear your name called out and we did not read your mail on the air, send us some, and we probably will.
And yeah, because we read all of her.
We do.
Well, we read a lot of it. We don't read all of it.
I read all of it.
We do read all of it.
We read all of it.
We don't read it all on
the air. I was going to say.
You might even get a personal response. You never know.
All right. Long-time listener, first-time writer in. Just listened to the VCon episode 118 and loved it. I do have a few points to make in regards to it.
Okay.
I think it was interesting when you were talking about how the human race is a kind of intergalactic teenagers. Among the possible advanced alien races out there. It echoes the feeling of the Baha'i religion. As mankind progresses and gets more mature, God sends the word through different manifestations. Moses,
listeners
Jesus,
are smart.
Muhammad, and I don't know how do you say, is it Baha'u'llah?
I don't know. But okay.
As mankind is ready to hear the messages, we call it that as mankind is ready to hear the messages, we call that progressive revelation. It wouldn't be much of a stretch to apply that to advanced alien races that may be out there giving or waiting to give clues to their own secrets, including their own existence. By the way, Baha'i... I'm having a little trouble with this. By the way, Baha'is believe that there is no conflict between science and religion. Any apparent disconnect just means that we've yet to understand the truth about whatever the issue is. I'm sure others will mention that Galileo didn't come up with the concept of the heliocentric universe, but was only a great proponent of it that crossed horns with the church about it. Copernicus is generally credited with coming up with the idea that it is the Earth that revolves around the sun and not vice versa.
Yeah.
Also,
we were wrong. Sorry.
Also, if you guys checked out about National Novel Writing Month, check out www.nanowrimo.org. Keep on geekling on. Onomatopoeia, James Brown.
James Brown
sent us an email. We were wrong about the Copernicus Galileo thing, so sorry, we'll fix it. Apologize.
You're gonna go back and fix it.
We're wrong about a lot of things.
Yeah, we'll go. I'll go back in time.
Just ask my wife.
Yeah.
Just the discussion about the intergalactic teenagers. Sort of, it reminded me of a book I read a long time ago. I'm not going to say the science behind this sci-fi book was all that solid, but it was just an interesting concept. Where basically, when mankind finally goes into the galaxy and starts exploring space, we find other alien races, which are consistently and almost always insectoid and reptilian. And they're sort of horrified to discover mammalian races. There's like one other mammalian race out there that's so happy to see us. And the reasoning behind that was because in a lot of these other planets in the universe, they were more stable. They didn't have these constant ice ages that kept wiping out that type of life form.
Or an asteroid.
So those races tend to be much more advanced than us because they had a $2 million lead on us, evolutionarily speaking.
Right.
So when we got out there, we were primitive, warm-blooded, like hairy weirdos, and they're just horrified by us.
I love it.
That's a really cool idea.
Warm-blooded. Yeah, it was an interesting concept.
Yeah.
Interesting.
All right, dear Geeks of Geeks On, I am a 25-year-old South African female who got wind of your podcast around the time you interviewed Gina Torres. Since then, I've made it a mission to catch up on your older podcasts. I'm now at EP50, and the only reason I probably haven't gotten through everything is bandwidth constraints. Side question, could this craving to listen to Geeks On be considered A, as an addiction, B, very healthy, and a thing that everyone should do, or C, a sign that I have no life whatsoever?
D, all of the above.
There we go.
welcome to our world.
Exactly. Through listening to your shows, I've come to realize that similar random and annoying constraints have hindered me from tapping into my inner geek. There are, for example, no geek-related shops in my city whatsoever, no comic book stores, no board game shops. I have done internet searches and haven't found a single RPG group within a 4-hour drive from my city.
That sucks.
There was a single geek shop here a few years ago, but it didn't last even 6 months before closing down and disappearing into the ether. I have to say, it's rather disconcerting to realize that I live in a geek-deprived wasteland, especially when your show has made me so curious to look at geek things such as board games, comic books, graphic novels, etc. In one of your early episodes, you mentioned some board games that you can play by yourself. I really appreciated that. I googled consulting detective, and while I can, of course, not get it here, I'm dropping anvil-shaped hints at my brother in England. Who knows? Maybe he'll bring one in his annual visit, and you'll hear a geeker squeak of joy from where you're at. You guys are awesome. Keep doing what you're doing. I'll be sure to spread the Geeks on Love around here as much as I can. Who knows? Maybe you guys will inspire the geek revolution my city so desperately needs. Keeps well, Marissa.
We are spreading across the universe.
Yes. Right, Marissa, you have a very special task, Marissa.
Yeah.
You have friends there.
Yeah.
You have friends who will be willing to perhaps come over to your place for a little dinner one night. And perhaps while they're there, you might pull out a board game called Settlers of Catan, which you've purchased from Amazon.com
or
something.
I would say
Carcassonne, perhaps.
Or Ticket to Ride, which is
a really good geek grenade.
Yeah.
So these things, it's a very simple board game, not intimidating, and then suddenly they're going to find themselves hoping you have another dinner party.
Maybe you would have another dinner party.
Ticket to Ride might be the smarter way to go.
I would agree.
Yeah.
I would agree.
That's, actually, I taught my mother Ticket to Ride a couple weeks ago, and she's not a game player at all, and she loved it.
Yeah.
And, of course, we've taught plenty of real game players who also love it.
Yeah.
It is your task
to be
the seed.
Yes.
In which geeks will sprout from.
Yes. Since you have found that there is this lacking in your environment, that means that there's a need. That means that, you know.
You too can be your grassroots geek campaigner.
You're our only hope. Your only hope.
And a quick note to Marissa and to all those other geeklings who keep writing in and saying, you know, I've listened to all your episodes. I'm so sad. I have no life. Let me just point out that not only have we listened to all of our episodes, we recorded them. So, preaching to the choir, baby.
Yeah.
We're in the same boat you are.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And we convert, all our friends to be geeks. I mean, we have game days where it's filled with people who don't play games. And I have people calling, asking when the next game day is going to be.
Yep.
Yeah. What's funny is I went to a Halloween party this year. Hosted by a non-geek who is sort of a geek now through association. And she had over a complete non-geek friend. And our non-geek friend infected her non-geek friend with geek activities. Now she's like all over this werewolf game.
There we go.
She just wants to play it constantly. So there you go. This next one is from Tom in Madison, Wisconsin. I just wanted to say hi and let you know that episode 115 is my first time with you guys, and you were gentle.
Okay. Shucks.
Bad joke. But I love the show and going to start adding past shows to my iTunes to listen to what I've been missing. Now, since I am not sure who it is that was talking about his weight loss, that would be me, Don, hello, I would just shoot this out to the group. First off, major woot for losing as much as you have. Being a bigger geek myself, I have struggled for years with my weight, and with going through cancer treatment this past year, my weight has gone up even more. So really, I am wondering what it is you're doing that you've been able to keep it with it and lose as much as you have. Love the show. Keep up the great work. Tom. Tom. Well, Don again. Hi. interesting. I am surprised by that email, actually. Long story short, I made a bunch of lifestyle changes that everyone tells you you're supposed to do, you know, eating less, exercising, all that stuff. And that got me down about 70 pounds, and at that point I had gastric bypass surgery. So that was 1 year ago. We actually literally just last night
had a party.
My 1 year anniversary, Don's First Supper dinner to follow up my Don's Last Supper 1 year ago.
Yeah.
And right now that puts my total weight loss at 229 pounds over the past 2 years.
He is...
Dang.
Yes. He is a toothpick now.
Yeah, I'm different. I still have probably another 35
You are very
35
different. It's amazing. We're actually going to have to commission a new picture from Cheyenne because Don is no longer...
Yeah, I don't quite fill out the Geeks On picture we have of me anymore.
Nope, not at all. Now you are a svelte toothpick.
I was actually joking with someone that I could like hunt down, capture, and skin my former self and make a Don suit for me. I totally could. Like dancing in the mirror.
It puts the lotion in the basket.
Yeah, pretty much.
But yeah, it was diet and exercise. You really just you did the work.
Yeah,
and you're still doing the work.
Yeah, even post surgery. Here's the deal. People don't talk about. Sorry, tangent for those of you who don't care.
Do it.
But the surgery is a fantastic tool, but it's only a tool if you don't actually do the work, like go into the gym, the exercise, really watching what you eat. It doesn't work. You know, you'll lose a big chunk of change and it'll come back. So
yeah, you're in the gym.
Don's in the gym and he eats really, really well.
One of the reasons why I hardly ever get to play video games anymore. And I miss them so much. But you have to make choices.
Have you started to enjoy the gym yet?
No.
Really?
I hate it with a passion. And now Bally's is just pissing me off 6 ways.
Right.
Do not join Bally's.
There you go.
I'm trapped. I am trapped at Bally's. I tried to cancel my membership and they denied me. They refused to cancel my membership and they are just taking money from me. And because of a contractual loophole, I can't just pull out. I can't just say stop paying them. I'm stuck with them for probably 2 years, maybe even three.
Oh, man. So you signed up for a 3-year contract.
Yeah. I mean, it's $25 a month. Yeah, I have a decent deal, but Bally sucks. So, yeah.
Jesus.
But they are close.
You can come work out at my nice club.
Yeah, it's super convenient. It's super convenient. Yeah. So.
All right. Here's the next one. First and foremost, you bitches rule.
I like this listener.
Listening to Geeks on 112 or one of the other episodes, Don or someone mentioned Archon from the Commodore 64. I think we've all mentioned
Archon.
I had one and played Archon, Quest Run, Ultima 3, 4, 5, Eternal Dagger. Remember these games of days of old. Mm-hmm. Apparently, Archon is now available for the iPhone or iPhone Touch app for $2.99.
Yep. I have it.
So do I. And have you played it recently?
I haven't played it yet.
Oh, make sure you update it because it is an entirely... When you first bought it, it was a pile of crap.
You said the controls were bad. That's why I didn't buy it.
It's way better.
Okay.
It's way better.
Oh,
so,
okay. Cool. Maybe I'll
then again, never. Then again, I never was one to carry a cell phone everywhere I go. But now that I have the iPhone, I keep it closer than my collection of Geeks On episodes. Now wait, I have those on my iPhone.
Oh, okay.
Is there anything this thing can't do? Once again, you bitches rule, and Archon has returned to it via iPhone. Thanks for living the dream and sharing it for the rest of us. William Bryant from Charleston, South Carolina, the Deep South.
There we go.
Southern geek.
We got Archon. And not only that, they have like a conquest mode now.
Yeah,
where I think
it's
they have
a single player campaign mode for Archon now.
Ooh! Which makes it kind of a better
idea.
It's
pretty good. The only thing I wished for, I mean, it's very faithful to the original, which is lovely. But I kind of want a new version that does something new, with a new character.
We also need a Bluetooth two-player game.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that would be fun.
I mean, that's the best way to play Archon.
Yeah,
yeah, so. I agree.
All right, Peter, do it.
So, he writes, so congrats to that one contributor. I think he's talking about John Wicks.
Yes.
He gave me a nightmare last night. That has never happened before. I only remember bits where I was the only one in my town that knew the darkness just on the other side of the shadows. I was waiting in the car watching some shadow and sensing that something was coming through. And they knew that I knew they were out there. I hoped that my friends wouldn't come out of the house. Two goblins pushed through. And this being a more realistic word, two goblins pushed through. And this being a more realistic world, two were more than enough to kill me, especially with teeth like they had. Slowly, they walked up to my car that was surrounded in fog, smiling because they knew I could see them. I locked the door just before one tried. It didn't lunge at the door viciously or anything. It just tried to open the door calmly while it eyed me, smiling with its gigantic set of teeth. Its friend calmly walked to the back door to try, and I lunged and locked it. Can't remember much past that, but wow. Hats off to your contributor. I never had a nightmare from a podcast before, and it was kind of cool.
Yeah, that was John Wick.
That's John.
Wick is phenomenal.
He's awesome.
One, I love his brain just as a game designer looking at his stuff. I'm so impressed. Mm-hmm. And two, just the way he puts together his contributions is smart and slick.
Yeah.
And we've got one on this episode.
Oh, my God! No!
Yeah, we got Smarty and John Wick at the end of this, so definitely stay tuned because they're the best. All right, so... having watched the BSG finale last night,
uh-oh.
All right. I've got to say that a show that once had so much promise has become so absolutely boring and nonsensical at the end. I write to you because I can't help thinking about what Don said on your show, that BSG is like the Dance of the Seven Veils. And I would say Lost is like that too, by the way. Well, when the sixth veil dropped, I thought I noticed a bit of stubble. And when the seventh dropped, the dancer was a dude. that's my opinion anyway. Hope you do a spoiler-filled BSG wrap-up. We did, obviously. I'd be interested in your opinion on such hot topics as what was Starbuck, what he does not like to be referred to as God. Were the Fantasy Seven in Baltar really angels? Why did everyone choose to go off and be hermits? How can a society who is so whiny about every little thing give up all technology to go native on Earth? What was the Cylon's plan? More importantly, what was the writer's plan? What was the point of the flashbacks in the last two episodes? Really a 3-hour, 2-part finale? And what was the big deal of Starbuck being a harbinger of doom? There's so many more. Look forward to your discussion, which I hope you do intend to have. We did.
Yeah.
Except and all of those are great points.
They're great points.
I think we should all watch. I haven't watched The Plan yet, which is out on iTunes. You have?
No, I have not.
I say we all watch it.
Can you get it on DVD yet?
Yeah, I think it's also
on DVD. I think it's out on DVD.
So I say we all watch it and have a episode about The Plan, because it supposedly tells you what their plan was.
I want to watch that in Caprica. I still haven't seen
it. I still don't know what Starbuck was. I confused the hell out of me.
Well, let's watch The Plan, and we'll do an episode on it. Maybe that will be the next one.
Yeah, and I didn't understand that. The other thing was I didn't understand. I was like, they're just going to walk off into the wilderness, and literally complaining about water and weights.
We agree that the finale was not great. At least it was.
The first half of it was great. It was just the point that, you know, after that.
I was on board. Like, I'll be the standout one. I was happy with it.
I felt satisfied. In other words, I felt like it had a completion and stuff, but there were, you know,
there were big holes.
Pretty absurd things that went on.
Yeah, I can accept that, but I didn't mind.
Yeah.
You know, I just felt like it was complete, and sometimes stories don't end. You know, there's times there things don't get resolved.
They just happen over
anyway,
and over again.
This one's from Andy. Hello, Andy. Okay, I had to stop listening to the Watchmen episode and write to Aaron in regards to his views on the ending of the book. The ending is meant to be fantastical and ridiculous. It's a commentary on the traditional superhero narratives, except Moore puts an excellent twist of real death, loss, and ambiguity into it. Also, the ending reminds me of the ending to the movie adaptation, where Cage's character is trying to subvert the typical Hollywood narrative, but then the movie ends with a thrilling Hollywood-style chase. In both cases, the sellout endings are very much done on purpose, except in Watchmen, I think Moore plays around with it a bit more. It's really quite amazing how he's able to do that, a bit like how Tarantino plays with norms. They both make it seem effortless. Awesome podcast, Andy.
I did not get that there was a comment on shitty endings.
Well, I think
being made.
The thing is...
You're right. He did it right. He made a shitty ending.
Well, I think the thing is, the movie version didn't work.
The movie version worked better.
I don't agree. I actually think, as far as what Andy's talking about.
Oh, okay.
The movie version tried to do something else.
Yes.
It
tried to fix the ending.
Yeah. And I thought it worked as a movie. But it didn't do what the comic book did. And what Andy's talking about is what the comic book did perfectly. I just don't think that would have worked being translated into movie form.
No.
That point wouldn't have been caught across.
I did not get that at all. When I read that, I did not get that there was a comic.
Read it again, man.
I'm not a big comic book guy.
Yeah, not being a comic book reader, that sort of thing. Like, remember when Watchmen came out, nobody read it but comic book readers.
Right.
No one expected anyone.
And nobody in the Silver Age expected to see that coming at them. So
it was a commentary for a specific audience when it never expected to have an audience beyond that.
Got it.
Hi,
Aaron, Matt, Don, and Peter. My name is Chloe, and my dad is a huge fan of you guys.
Your dad has excellent taste.
Yes, he does.
I've only heard a little bit of the latest few episodes, but I think you're really good. Something I wanted to point out that I noticed, your trouble with pronouncing the word yaoi.
Yeah, yaoi.
Yaoi.
Yeah.
You wanted to help, just wanted to help you out and let you know it's pronounced yaoi.
Okay.
You know, like the Australian version of Bigfoot.
We didn't know.
I did not know that either.
I didn't know there was an Australian version of Bigfoot.
Also,
and very close to Yahweh, which is
no, actually, I was thinking, we need to refer to Yahweh as Yahweh from now on.
This might be one of those things that people pronounce differently in different places because we were told very distinctly it was Yahweh.
That's true.
When we were at the anime.
Yeah, she says Yahweh.
Well, the thing is, it's Japanese, so there should only be one correct pronunciation.
That's true.
Yeah.
But I think I've heard people pronounce it Yahweh, like she's saying.
Yeah, oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Also, it doesn't have to mean gay people in Japanese. It actually means no climax, no point, no meaning.
Oh, so it's kind of like Dadaism. That's interesting.
Were you to ask a Japanese street artist to draw you Yaoi, and I don't know why anyone would do so, but still, he would probably draw a cat chasing his tail.
Okay.
Also, I have an advanced copy of this book called Geektastic, Tales from the Nerd Herd, by a collection of authors including Garth Nix, John Green, and M.T. Anderson. My mom works at a bookstore and brought it home for me, and once it's released, I urge you guys to check it out. It's totally awesome. It's got everything from Klingons to Buffy, Battlestar to Final Fantasy, and Comic-Con to MMORPGs. It's definitely an epic, it's definition of epic, and scheduled to come out in August 09.
Sold.
So
it's out.
It's out.
It's out.
Boy, this isn't, you pulled some old ones.
There were old ones, man. We had some stuff to do.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks for taking time to read, Chloe.
That's good.
That was a good one.
Really good. I mean, I like that.
Yowie.
Yowie is also Dadaism.
Good to know.
Hi, all. I've been catching up on past podcast.
You have my disease.
You do. Jeez, what's going on?
Suddenly, I'm able to read out loud.
Podcat. Wow. Hi, all. I've been catching up on past podcast episodes and have... and noticing just how much geeky news is related to computers and video games.
True.
I was wondering, have you in any previous episodes touched on whether or not it's possible to be a non-computer geek? I definitely think of myself as geeky. I read fantasy, sci-fi, love playing Risk, go to Ren Fairs, and have watched too many canceled before their time geeky shows to count.
You're definitely a geek.
You are such a geek.
Going to be canceled after this year, apparently.
Yeah.
But wouldn't know a computer code if it hit me in the head, and fail miserably at every game except Guitar Hero. It's not an age thing, I'm 21, just an interest thing. A while back, someone mentioned that geeks like new things, but isn't it a different type of geeky to like old stuff?
Yes.
Yes.
Anyway.
You're right.
I'd be interested to know what you think. Looking forward to the next episode of my favorite podcast, Tanya.
Yeah. So, I mean, well, we do look forward and look back.
Well, Tanya,
I mean,
that's 21.
Hey, Tanya, 21.
Well, one thing to bring up, we're going to be doing an episode on this eventually. This was actually going to be our topic today, but we sidelined it.
Yeah.
Is the differentiation between sci-fi and fantasy geeks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are multiple brands of geek. And it's plenty. My opinion that fantasy geeks in general don't really tend to be as hardcore into the computer stuff as the sci-fi leaning geeks.
Right.
Sci-fi leaning geeks tend to be more into the tech, mm-hmm. you know, into the next hot gizmo.
I mean,
but you're still learning about minutiae.
No, but I'm making broad generalizations. Yeah. But in this day and age, I also think that geeks are merging a bit more. There's more slosh, more spillover between different fascinations now.
So, Tanya 21, you just need to merge with another geek.
Oh, Aaron.
What? I'm just giving some advice.
This is why we can't have nice listeners. You break them all.
Where were you going?
Sorry.
I had a point. Drink.
You had a point. Aaron drove it from your mind.
Gone now. He all exercised right. my mind.
I'm going to go to the next one. If it recurs to you, we'll come back to it.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. I'm not sure if you guys make the clothes on your website. We do not.
Make the what?
The clothes on our website. We do not. We do have an interesting... t-shirts that we haven't updated in years.
Oh, got it. Yeah.
Or whatnot. But my fiance had an idea about a new shirt. Not sure if there's already a shirt that exists, but or not. But oh well. Anyway, complete babble. But a shirt that says "Wow Widow" and for the WoW player, "Wow Widower."
There are those shirts.
Well, there you
look
go.
That up. It's there's plenty of those shirts out there.
Shame. It's a great idea.
Thought it would be cool. P.S. Love the last episode. I look forward to the next one. Love you guys. The cheerleader geek.
Where are all cheerleaders?
What's up with China 21?
I don't know. They sent us mail.
You're the one that put it in this order.
This was literally just reading down the list.
Wait a minute.
Okay, if this is chronological, we got to look at what episodes came out right before these so we can figure out
which episodes to repeat.
You only picked like the young gals who wrote us.
I picked short episodes with
simple cheerleader questions.
Short
questions. Ready? D20! Anyway.
One. D20.
This one is from A.S. Metcalf. What an interesting name. Dear Geeks of Geeks On, first, let me say how much I love your podcast. I think I've listened to nearly every episode about 3 times already, and I keep going back for more.
Poor Metcalf.
Poor soul, I'm sorry. every time I log onto my computer, the first thing I do is check iTunes to see if there's a new show waiting for me. I've slowly started posting on your forums as well. Yay. Some of you might have seen me lurking around the threads as Full Metal Patch.
Oh, okay.
Hey.
You're smarty. Second, I wonder if you could recommend some good entry-level board games that can be played with only 2 people. I have one geek friend in my area, also a listener of Geeks On, and we're both interested in expanding our horizons to include board games.
Mm-hmm.
Every time the subject of board games comes up on the show, I get the impression of games you're talking about are meant to be played by more than 2 people.
True.
Mm-hmm. But I was hoping to find something my friend and I can try out, at least until we find some other board gamers in our area. Any suggestions?
Yes.
I have a bunch of suggestions.
Me too.
Why don't you start?
I would suggest with 2 very small games that both come from, I think, Rio Grande Games. In fact, I'm staring at one of them. One's a card game called Lost Cities, which is a great 2-player game. Super simple, but once you start playing, you realize that there's a lot of strategy in it.
Yeah.
And another one that comes in the same size box, I think from the same people, called Medici versus Strozzi.
Yes.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's such a good game.
It's super simple, yeah. And it's the rules is like less than a paragraph, but boy, that's a brain burner when you start playing against somebody else.
Two games that are good are Stone Age and Carcassonne.
Yeah.
And both of those are good because you can play the card version, right? Well, you can play them as a two-person games, but they can also expand to multiplayer games as well.
Is Stone Age a good 2-player game?
Yeah, actually it works fine.
Really?
And then two other good ones are Starship Catan and there's
2-player Settlers of Catan.
And the 2-player Settlers of Catan, and my wife and I love
those are card games.
Yes, sort of.
They're cardboard games.
Right.
Yeah.
But when he's saying the 2-player version of Settlers of Catan, it's specifically the Settlers of Catan card game.
Card game.
Yeah.
The board game is not good for 2 players.
No, you can't.
It's the 2-players version, but the 2-players version is a fantastic game. It's a type of game that you could play. You know, you can play for years because it's a very complicated game with a lot of...
That's very easy to learn.
Very easy to learn.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's another one I have not played, but by reputation, it's supposed to be one of the best of the 2-player board games. I think it's called Tigris and Euphrates.
Yeah, that's a classic. You actually play that online. Okay. You can do a search and you can play that for free online and try it out.
But by reputation, I believe on Board Game Geek, it is the highest rated 2-player board game out there.
And that you can play with more than... 2, right?
I believe that if it's the game I'm thinking of, it's specifically a 2-player game. I bought it for Peter for his birthday 1 year, but he already had it, I think.
I'm going to suggest a game called, if you want to play a war game, one of my favorite games is Memoir 44.
Yeah.
And that is a very simple starter war game, World War II game, and
that's fun.
Awesome. Yeah, and that's fun. There's also all sorts of expansions out now, including the newest one, which is a campaign book. Which links like
you
a
can
whole
do like
bunch
the
of,
attack on Peenemünde or whatever you
it
want
links
to do.
A whole bunch of missions together and does kind of a choose your own adventure. If one team wins, go this direction. If the other team wins, go this direction with a little flow chart, and you actually see a campaign unraveling. And you can even do grand campaigns where you link 4 of the mini campaigns together for an entire.
World War II experience.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Yeah. And it's that's like $60. That's a Days of Wonder game.
Cool.
Also, just another quick one. This is not a simple game, but this is another one that apparently does work for 2 players. I have not played a 2-players, so keep that in mind. The Arkham Horror video game, the Arkham Horror board game. Arkham Horror? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Arkham Horror. That one can actually be played by 1 player. I know someone who actually does enjoy that, although very few 1-player board games are ever worth talking about. But it can be played with two players. I've actually heard it's quite good with two players.
I think I'd rather play like Pandemic.
But it is extremely... It is a big boy board game.
It is
this
a big
is
boy
board game. Not a simple one to learn.
And it's like 4 hours.
Yep. Yep. Marathon.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Hey, guys. Oh, God. Hey, guys. It's my anal retentive tendencies, but it really bothers me that there's no associated album artwork with the podcast. On iTunes, okay, this is a Matt thing. We'll have it fixed here soon. On iTunes, I just get the general gray picture of what looks like a psychic weeble. Any thoughts of adding artwork to the show? Okay, yes, we used to do that, and we'll have it done here soon.
Hey guys, I love your podcast. I'm listening to episode 104, The Holiday Gift Guide, and cringing at the lack of accurate information you have about the Kindle and ebooks. Well, you're listening to a very old episode at this point. I'm a professional ebook developer, and I'd be happy to give you a tutorial on what's up with ebooks and the various readers that are out there. Ebooks are definitely a geek must-have. If you're interested in chatting, please let me know. Joshua Talent.
Wow. Yeah. Well, Joshua, we should talk to Joshua because here's the major problem with ebooks. They're too damn expensive. If you're paying $400 for something that only reads a book, I'm sorry, you spent too much money.
Yeah, it should be playing all of my media and make phone calls for
and going on the internet and getting your email and reading newspapers and all that shit.
Yep.
I paid that much for my freaking iPhone.
Yep.
I'm sorry. If it's not under $99, it's not a must have.
Okay.
And I know that you're actually working hard on this type of stuff. You're doing your job. The rest of the people who are working on your project needs to get it under $99.
All right. So, hi there. I just listened to the Richard Hatch interview, and I enjoyed it lots. If I may, I'll include one piece of very constructive criticism in a totally non-confrontational way.
Yeah, right.
Bring it.
You suck!
I found that the geeks spent too much time talking and not enough time listening. I have a bit of interview experience myself, and I've found that when you get talkative guests like Richard Hatch on, your best course of action is to let him go on, guiding the discussion here and there with an insightful, relevant questions. Mm-hmm. It's not a time for the interviewers to air their own opinions. But I felt like that was going on a bit too much in the Hatch interview. Mm-hmm. I really did enjoy listening, though. Thanks, Neil McGarry.
Well, one thing we actually try to do in general...
Yeah.
Is we actually don't interview our guests.
Right.
By and large. We actually generally try to avoid that. We actually try to have our guests come in and have conversations.
Yeah, usually our interviews have been when we go out and we have like very little time. Like we did that with Orson Scott Card.
Yes.
George R. Martin.
And those were George R. R. Martin. Those were actual interviews. And those were very specific. We had limited time. Usually if they're sitting with us, Don's right. We try to integrate them into a conversation with us.
And the other thing was that...
But he's right.
Well, we do interrupt them, but we also let Richard talk a lot in that episode. And we... Actually, that episode and that interview is one half the length that it was originally. So we may be interrupting because of edits more than...
But, you know, when we got all sorts of comments, not directed necessarily at us, emailed to us, but if you check the other websites when we did the Joss Whedon episode, we had a lot of his fans listen to him. And, you know, which is fine. We have a lot of that where just for one episode, we have people who are interested in that particular topic tune in. So we had a lot of Joss Whedon fans tune in. And there were some absolutely incensed people. The fact that we talked at all.
Were you talking?
Yeah. Who is this? I'm not sure who Aaron Hendricks is, but he obviously doesn't know who Joss Whedon is. Otherwise, he wouldn't have interrupted him, I think, maybe three times. And I was like, wow. Use my name directly.
She knows my name.
So we've gotten comments that we usually have conversations and they're not interviews.
Yeah, but, I mean, the best answer I have to people is this is a show we do out of love and because we enjoy it.
Yeah.
And this show is giving us the opportunity to sit down and chat with some people that we greatly admire.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to use that opportunity to chat with them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, like exchange. The Joss Whedon episode, we didn't talk about him.
No.
At his request.
A very small... Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know,
so I loved that.
I loved that, and I want to do that even more often. Yeah. Though a lot
when I brought it up, you guys thought it was crazy.
He was the one that suggested that we do the sort of conversation.
Yeah,
style.
Yeah, and I think it's a great idea. I was the one that suggested it, and you guys said I was all nuts.
Oh. Well, it's great when Joss thinks of that idea. When you think of that idea, it's not good.
Do you know who Joss Whedon is?
Yeah, I don't know who Aaron Hendricks is, but obviously Joss Whedon's ideas are way better.
So this one is from Kevin Fisher. Hey, geeks. I just listened to show 103, and great show as always. I just wish they were a little more frequent. Yeah.
Yeah, that hasn't improved.
Lives are hard, you know?
Yeah, I know.
I guess this is the price we pay for trying to get four Hollywood professionals to work around their careers. I'll take the shows whenever I can get them.
There you go.
Anyway, Smarty Librarian gave some good suggestions for classic books to read.
She does.
If the listeners don't want to make the trek to the library, most of her suggestions are now public domain and can be found in PDF or ebook format on the internet. I've downloaded books like Dracula, Frankenstein, War of the Worlds, and Grimm's Fairy Tales from Planet PDF and Planet ebook. This way, you don't have to worry about returning the books. Although it does tie you to your computer while you read. Keep up the great work, Kevin Fisher.
Great,
some good suggestions.
Where are we?
Greetings, fellow geeks.
Greetings, fellow geeks. My name's Peter, and I'm currently studying art and video game design on an island off the coast of Sweden. Yeah.
Ooh.
How did I get there? I'm a longtime listener and fan. I particularly like the concept discussions, you guys. Get into the great stuff for getting the creative juices flowing. Anyway, as you can imagine, I spend a lot of time playing and thinking about video games. My question is to you, what are your opinions on games getting easier to get into for the casual, not so geeky crowd? Is it all wonderful? Are we losing some of the cool, imaginative ways to play games? I myself is torn on the issue. I remember the old days where I was forced to draw my own maps to find my way around the game world to make the semi complex calculations on Notepad just to figure out the passcode to some pixelated vault. It was a pain to do it, but the emotional payoff was very fulfilling. Sometimes I can't help but missing the stretch of the magic circle that seems somewhat absent in modern games.
The HUD, yeah.
What are your thoughts on the issue? Best regards, Peter Flink.
Yeah, almost every game has an HUD or a heads-up display now. And, yeah, they always have your map or, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, but, I mean...
But he's talking about games getting easier in general for new players to come in.
Well, okay. I think there's a still mix. I mean, I think there's some... I think maybe ease of use... is different than an easier game. I think better menus, better controls, better. This is an evolution. To say that you have to sit there and sketch a map on a piece of paper is better than having an interactive map that allows you to get through the game and having a fun experience. But I think there's because some of the casual gamers, they're trying to get some of the casual gamers in. We have seen some technology pop out that I don't think we would have. I think the Wii, right. Although I'm not a big fan of the Wii myself, has pushed technology. I think the next game consoles that are coming out, in fact, we're going to see some additions to Xbox and PlayStation here soon.
Well, Project Natal is going to...
Well, you know, we'll see. That's announced to... that they're going to that come out with that 2010, winter of 2010. But we're going to see something new happen.
Yep.
And that's because they're trying to get your mom to play.
Yep.
And in getting your mom to play, will the next Call of Duty have some type of integrated new feature that, you know, will the characters look directly into your eyes because the camera knows where you are in the room? That might be pretty interesting.
Yeah. Or spooky.
Or spooky. Yeah. Who knows?
Okay, so he this guy writes in about the zombie invasion conversation that we had.
Yes.
He says, seriously, I already have that all figured out. I'm an EMT. My wife is a nurse, and my brother is an electrician. And we have a two-story flat roof building downtown all scoped out. All the basics. Western Pennsylvania, cold for half the year, plenty of time to relax in summer. It's good stuff. When the zombies hit, head towards Johnstown. Ha. Thanks again, guys. Chris.
So Chris has a zombie escape plan as well.
Yeah, Chris has got the zombie escape plan.
I've realized recently my zombie escape plan is insufficient and I need to redesign.
We need to buy that damn nuclear shelter.
Mm-hmm.
It was only a million.
We should do a bit on each of our what happens when the zombie outbreak happens and what we do.
Your escape plan?
Our escape plan, yeah.
All right, I'm not sharing my escape plan with anyone else. Are you kidding?
You don't have to. You don't have to give specifics of locations.
You can. You can alter that. You can alter facts.
Yeah. So then everybody's going to be escaping freaking Los Angeles on mopeds. Oh, damn it!
Well, that's the end of our mailbag. At least the
for
first
now.
For now, we still have more to dig through,
yes.
And we receive mail every day. So we will do another one sooner than later.
Hopefully.
But before we end this episode, we have. Smarty Librarian and John Wick, strangely enough, they happened to sync up on a topic.
Yeah, they
here.
Were in the same geek mind.
Yeah, we did
space.
Not tell them this. They did this all by themselves.
So we were talking on...
they were plotting behind the scenes.
So let's start with John Wick. Online in the web forum, somebody in the forum suggested or asked for an opinion about how to make a Harry Potter type of role-playing game for it to play with his kids.
Yeah.
And people started putting up their
ideas
of how you can do that. And it just so happens that...
John saw it was like, hey, you want me
John
to
John Wick, game designer supreme.
You want me to do a Harry Potter role-playing game? Here's
well,
how to do a Harry Potter role-playing
game.
Well,
it's not a Harry Potter role-playing game.
Right, right,
it's
right.
It's a magical...
There is no TM involved, right.
It is a magical school...
of Hogwarts? No. Of
it's
sorcery.
Henry Potterman.
Henry Potterman... Sorcerer.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, here's his little bit on that. And then right afterwards, we're going to put Smarty Librarian and her take on that whole subject.
Excellent.
Okay, here we go.
Check it out.
I've been designing a lot of games for people lately. The Shotgun Diaries was for Nick's birthday, and Yesterday's Tomorrow I'm writing for his sister, Ro. And then I go on the Geeks On forums and I see someone asking for a Harry Potter role-playing game. Harry Potter, huh? Okay. I can do that. A long time ago, literally about 5 years ago, I ran an impromptu game at Gen Con with a few friends. They told me what they wanted to play and I said, okay, let's do that. I called it Harry Potter 90210. It was a lot of fun to run and... apparently, it was a lot of fun to play. At least, that's what all my friends told me. Ever since then, I thought about writing out that game. I had a few notes, but not really anything presentable. And then on the forums, after talking about the Shotgun Diaries, people said, I'd like a Harry Potter role-playing game. Well, what a coincidence. Okay, here's your Magic High School role-playing game. Don't bother looking for the serial numbers. I've already filed them off. First, we need your character sheet. And I had this great idea for a sheet. I noticed a few others had thought of it too, but that's because great ideas are just too great to be ignored. Your character sheet is your report card slash class schedule. As freshmen, you'll be taking mostly basic classes. Of course, you get to pick from a variety of them. A few are mandatory, but I'll allow a couple of electives. Elemental Alchemy is a good class to take. So is Wards and Magic Circles. Brooms and Carpets. Can't forget those, although those sound like more like an advanced class. Now, each student starts off each class knowing nothing, or maybe just a little bit of something. But usually, when you try to cast a spell or invoke magic power, you fail in some way. That's going to be fun because we're going to allow the players to call their own failures. This means when your character blows the spell, you say how he blows it. We determine success and failure with dice rolls, but the players get to say how their characters fail, and that makes failure fun. It's important to get good professors, because if you get the bad ones, you won't learn anything. Therefore, your character can't learn more about a subject than the professor knows. Like Mr. Miyagi says, no such thing as a bad student, only a bad teacher. Teachers say, and student do. I suppose we could give you time for independent study... yeah, free time. Let's talk about that. main problem with academic study is that you never have enough time. There's always more homework. Whenever you think you're done, there's more just waiting for you. And since this is part of being a student, let's make it part of the game. Your character has a stat called free time. You can use free time however you like, but you should devote some of it to studying. If you study, you get to raise your stats. If you use free time to run around and have adventures, you get to do that too and add other things to your character sheet. But if you don't study, you won't pass your finals, and if you don't pass your finals, you flunk out, and your character leaves play. Yeah. Slacking off can kill your character. Ain't school fun? So, here's how the game actually works. You have ranks and classes. Elemental Alchemy, for example. You have a 4 in Elemental Alchemy. That means whenever you use what you learned in class, you roll 4 10-sided dice. If you beat the target number, usually a 15, your character succeeds, and you can say how he succeeds. If you don't beat the target number, your character fails, and you say how your character fails. If you have a lot of dice, you can set them aside to add to the effect. In other words, if you have 6 dice, you can set 2 of them aside and roll just 4 to beat the target number. If you succeed, you add those bonus dice to the effect of your success. If you fail, you still add those bonus dice, but this time, you add to the degree of your failure. Now, how do you get more dice? Studying, of course. Every student gets 10 points of free time each quarter. Each point of free time devoted to studying gives you more dice in that class. The more you study, the more dice you get. You can also use free time to go on adventures. Going on an adventure costs 1 point of free time. But adventures are where everything happens. It's where you find magical artifacts like a locket that allows you to break the rules of time, and where you find a magical friend like a dragon who lives in a cave deep in the woods behind school. It's also where you get that magic map that shows you all the secret passageways in the school. Sorry, no Mary Sue characters allowed in my game. You can't rely on NPCs just giving you cool things. You have to go out and find them. At the end of the semester, it's time to determine your grades. First, multiply your rank by 10. If you have a rank 5 Elemental Alchemy, you start with a final grade of 50. Then, you roll a number of 10-sided dice equal to your rank in that class, and add the result to your base grade. So rank 5 Elemental Alchemy starts off with a grade of 50, and then you roll 5 10-sided dice and add the result. That's an average of 75, a low C. You better get studying. Now, how does magic work? Well, you tell me. J.K. Rowling is making up this stuff on her own as she goes, so if it's good enough for her, it's good enough for me. But that brings up another subject. The subject of cheating. Cheating is a huge thing in academic drama, so let's make a mechanic out of it. You can add up to 3 dice to any roll. 3 dice that you have no business using. These are your cheating dice. And they're D6s, not D10s. Add them to the result of anything you're trying to do. If any of your cheating dice rolls a 1, you get caught cheating, and what you're trying to do fails. Not only does it fail, but the game master gets to say how it fails. You can also use cheating dice to pass finals, but if you get caught, you get expelled. That's right, cheating can kill your character. And that's the nuts and bolts of it. I'll put one of my graphics guys on making a character sheet and upload a PDF of these little slap-together rules as soon as I can. But what you heard is pretty much all you need to get started. Everything else that most role-playing games have, like hit points, armor class, falling damage, all of that stuff is for people who are obsessed with simulated murder. And I'm not really interested in that. Oh, Wizardly Duels. I've got to come up with something for that, too. And when I hit the LA area, I'll let you guys know, and we'll play a session or two. But I wouldn't start jumping around just yet. I give a lot of pop quizzes, a ton of homework, and I grade on a curve. And if you show up to my class, you better bring an apple.
Okay.
Mr. Wick. Shall we move on to Miss Smarty?
Yes, Miss Smarty Librarian. I think she's putting her opinion on...
It's Harry Potter for grown-ups.
Harry Potter for grown-ups. Okay, here we go.
It's like Harry Potter for grown-ups. How many times have you heard this used to describe everything from the latest Dan Brown potboiler to whatever Wizards and Dragons book their publishers are desperate to turn into the next big cash cow? Here's the thing, though. When publishers and reviewers say Harry Potter for grown-ups, what they usually mean is, here is an adventure slash coming-of-age story that has sex, or at least some boobs in it. The same charge of Harry Potter for grown-ups was thrown up against Lev Grossman's The Magicians, which is why I delayed so long in reading it. But I'm glad I finally did, because unlike the latest Dan Brown potboiler, The Magicians is a book actually written on an adult level, rather than just containing adult material. We're introduced to the main character, an unlikable and unsympathetic 17-year-old boy named Quentin, as he trudges through New York City on his way to a round of college interviews. Instead of ending up at Dartmouth or Yale, Quentin is whisked off to the entrance exams at Breakbills Academy of Magic. If The Magicians was just a novel about a miserable middle-class kid who goes to magic college, I might not have finished the book. But there is another, more interesting twist to this story. A series of books within the book, chronicling the adventures of some English schoolchildren in a land called Fillory, which reminds me and everyone else who read them a lot of Narnia. Fillory is what elevates The Magicians from Harry Potter for grown-ups to an adult novel taking a look at the neuroses of those of us who, perhaps, spend a bit too much time in the ideal worlds of fantasy and not enough time learning how real life works. Quentin remains unpleasant and unsatisfied through much of the novel. There is no magical revelation of truth and happiness, and Quentin manages to be just as miserable at Breakbills as he would have been at NYU or Columbia. Fillory weaves its way through the story, providing both in-jokes for Narnia buffs and casting an ominous shadow over Quentin's new life. Rather than tedious and trite Harry Potter comparisons, The Magicians actually reminded me a lot of Curtis Sittenfeld's Prep. Because just like the heroine of Prep, who thought that going to boarding school would magically transform her into the person she always wanted to be, Quentin finds that magic will not transform his life. He remains the same as always, proving that no matter where you go, you can't really escape from yourself. You can't really escape from yourself, and you can't really escape from my book reviews, either. Not that you would want to. Back to you, boys.
Right on.
Love her.
We have good contributors.
We do, we do.
And
we
by the way, you can...
Great contributors.
We really do.
You can email them directly. They have a Geeks On email now.
Yep.
So you can email...
John@geekson.com, J-O-H-N, or smarty@geekson.com.
Also, you can go to our forums, and they check the forums out, and they're constantly on there reading, and yes. You can start up a topic and talk to them and get several people talking about a topic or this particular thing, have them join the conversation. So you can go to geekson.com and check the forums there.
Sounds good.
Anything else?
Nope.
That's about it.
Well, let's close this bitch down. Hey.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Hey.
You are right. So street.
Hey. All right. Let's close it down. Everybody have a good geek week. Bye.
Rock it out.
Geek it out.